Hello, and welcome to Academy of Blues. I'm your host, Matty Gebrekristos, and I want to thank you for joining us today on this episode. Academy of Blues is a Chelsea FC podcast that's trying to keep us engaged and keep you entertained during what has undoubtedly been the most boring couple of months in our football following lives. We are at an indefinite break from the beautiful game because of COVID-19, but worry not, my partner and I have something delicious in store for you today. In part one, we discuss Chelsea FC end of season awards. We know the season's not over yet, but we're going to give out the awards anyways. Who's been our best player? Our worst one? Who's been our surprise player of the year? Oh, so much to think about. In part two of today's episode, we take another trip down memory lane and look at 2012's Champions League journey in our podcast within a podcast series, Our Road to Champions League Glory. And to help us navigate through all these things, it's 2016's good luck charm for Chelsea, a man so devoted to the game that he's consolidated a lifetime of following Chelsea into four eventful years. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I have with me Chief Academy of Blues co-host, Daniel Gonzalez. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing, Matty?
Man, I am excited. I am very excited because as you and I arrived to record this episode, and we're getting ready, you came up to me with some really, really good news that's got me excited. Please, tell our listeners what this news is.
For all of you listeners out there, this is a message for you. Thank you so much for listening to our show. And our big news is that we've gone international.
We're international, fam.
Yeah. We have a few listeners around the globe at this point. So for you listeners out there in England, in Zambia, in Thailand and in Belgium, welcome to our American podcast talking about British football.
Really, all we've been doing is just sitting down in front of one another and recording each episode. And so we're super thankful. We're excited that somehow, you know, somebody in Zambia is listening. Somehow somebody in Thailand is listening and somebody in the UK is listening.
I feel legitimized.
Yeah.
Legitimized?
Yeah.
That's a word, right?
Legitimized?
Legitimized. Something like that.
You said it three times, so now it's a word.
It's that's the rule.
All right, Daniel. What I would like to do in today's episode, in the first part, is give out the Academy of Blues Awards, or should I say, the Academy Awards. That's a LA Hollywood La La Land joke
that's
for
the
you,
kind
if
of,
you'd like.
That's the kind of humor we have here.
Yeah.
That's what we're bringing to the table.
And the Oscar goes to, now Oscar is not a Chelsea player anymore, so that will
make
sense.
Oscar goes to China in general.
That's funny.
Thanks.
I appreciated that.
I like when you don't laugh at jokes, you just say, that's funny.
Yeah, it's not like haha funny, but it's still funny. Okay, so what I would like us to do is I would like us to talk about who has been our player of the year, who has been our young player of the year. We've had plenty of those guys to pick from. Who has been our surprise package of the year and our disappointment of the year? So we will start with those two at the bottom. You give us yours. So who has been your surprise package of the year and your biggest letdown of the year?
All right. We're doing two at a time.
Yeah.
Two at a time. So first of all, my biggest surprise of the year is actually Pulisic. Christian Pulisic is my biggest surprise of the year. And I don't think I think it's a hot take. I really like that phrase.
So
I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah,
I love the phrase hot take.
You do.
Here's my argument. I'm going to pitch this to you as a big surprise.
I'll deny it.
Because Christian Pulisic is coming to Chelsea, and it's the summer of 2019. Hazard's gone. Lampard's coming in. We have no new signings besides Pulisic. Not really Kovacic. He was already a player here. Pulisic's the only new player coming into the team that's not a youth player from another club. Anything like that. So Pulisic comes in. He's an incredibly expensive signing. Hazard's left, and he's kind of taking the position. So even though he's not really a Hazard replacement, he kind of has that on his shoulders as a responsibility. He's supposed to bring that flair that Hazard had. So he has that riding on him. He's a big money signing. He's the only real signing that we have. He's American, which is already throwing a bunch of hype on every single American's like hopes and dreams rest on this kid's shoulders.
Right.
And it's his very first year in the Premier League, which is already hard for any player coming into the Premier League, is to move from a different league into the Premier League, a very physical, difficult league to play in if you haven't done it before. So, to be honest, as positive as I try to be about Chelsea, I wasn't expecting too much from Pulisic. I was kind of expecting him to maybe ride the bench for a long time, get a few games in, not do too much. He's never been prolific as a goal scorer or as an assist sort of maker. And he's still pretty young. So I was expecting Christian Pulisic to ride the bench, get a few games in, at best, maybe start starting after the middle of the season and kind of getting a few games in there. So the fact that Pulisic comes in, he gets eased in by Lampard a bit, but the fact that he comes in and scores a hat trick in that Burnley game, which is incredible, I have to say.
Yeah.
So my biggest surprise is that Christian Pulisic actually seemed to land on his feet. He wasn't incredible, I'll say that. He's not a 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10 player when he comes in, but he hasn't been like a disappointment.
Agreed.
And that is my biggest surprise. And that's he's not going to be my youth player. He's not going to be my men's player. He's not going to be my youth player. He's not going to be my men's player of the year. But the fact that he came in and stumbled a bit, but managed to get onto his feet and make his name as a solid Premier League player, that's my surprise, right? My biggest letdown of the season is Christian Pulisic.
Oh, okay. Go on then.
So, despite everything I've said so far, Christian Pulisic gets injured and is basically disappeared from the team.
Yeah.
And I feel that it's such a letdown for me personally because I didn't expect too much, and to see him exceed those expectations, getting goals, getting starting time, and seeming to really gel with the team, and just starting to make his impact into the team and kind of cement his place, and then he gets injured, and then the season ends, is the worst for me because it felt like everything was starting to go the way it felt like he was starting to finally roll down the hill. He climbed all the way up, and he was rolling down the other side, and he was just there.
Good illustration.
And then the rest of the hill just dropped, and he fell off a cliff. And that is incredibly disappointing for me. So, on to you.
For me, our biggest surprise of the year, or my biggest surprise of the year, has been Fikayo Tomori.
Oh.
When Frank Lampard was coaching at Derby last year, and he took two Chelsea players on loan, it was Mason Mount and Fikayo Tomori. And there was so much talk about like how great Mason Mount was doing, how he was going to be a part of the Chelsea team in the future or as soon as this season, etc. We heard that about Mason Mount. And just like from the get-go, Mason Mount came in and he really established himself as a starter in that team and has been kind of undroppable because he really dictates how we press and how we play. He creates opportunities and all that good stuff. With Mason Mount, there was all this expectation. Fikayo Tomori, I kid you not, the first time that I saw him on the bench, I was like, who is this guy? And the first time that he played was against Sheffield United. Every time he was on the ball and every time he was defending a one-on-one or whatever, there was just like, who is this guy and where has he been? And then I come to find out that Mason Mount was at Derby's Player of the Year. It was Fikayo Tomori who was Derby's Player of the Year last year. And so this guy kind of just flew under the radar for a while, and then he just really came onto the scene, and he hasn't really been established because it's hard in that back line, because for those two positions in the middle, there's four players competing for those two positions, with Zuma, Christensen, and Rudiger being the other players. But here's the cool thing about Tomori. Every time we've played a 3-4-3 formation, he's been in the team. And the first time we played it was against Wolves. Scored a goal, created a second one. Yeah. Then he did it again against Valencia. That didn't work out on that specific day. But the other times that we did that, it was against Tottenham twice. And that worked like a charm. And so you've got this young player who's playing his first season with the first team, and he's been in a lot of the big games or the tricky games that would have been hard for us to win, and he really showed up. He really held his own. So he has been the surprise package of the season for me. As far as our most disappointing or biggest letdown of the season so far, it's Kepa Arrizabalaga. When you are the world's most expensive keeper, and when the club brings you in and offers you a 7-year contract, in all my time following Chelsea, not a single player has been given a 7-year contract. That is a really long contract. But they gave him 7 years because they just really believed in this guy, and they're like, so for the next more than half of a decade, we see you as the man behind, as the man in front of goal, who is going to lead us into the titles that we're going to win and into all the challenges that we're going to get into. When that's the kind of faith and belief that the club has in him, then the fans, so like myself, we start to think, well, if the club sees that in him, then sure, we're going to see that in him as well. And he had like these awesome moments of brilliance in the first season that made me think like, oh yeah, Kepa is going to be great. And so this season, to come to find out that he has the worst save percentage in the Premier League, that's really disappointing. And then at the same time, in essence, he's been so bad that at this point, Frank Lampard doesn't even trust him to be the kind of keeper who's going to win us a game. So he's been spending a lot of time on the bench. So now you have this $70 million keeper just sitting on the bench because he's not really able to show up to certain games. He's been the biggest letdown of the year. In a season when we have 5 or 6 brand new players who have never played at this level, to come to find out that the most expensive goalkeeper in the world is your biggest like flop of the season, that's a letdown. So I would nominate Kepa as that for me. I'm going to turn it back to you, and I want you to give us your young player of the year.
It has to be my boy, Tammy Abraham.
Oh, Tammy Abraham.
So, Tammy Abraham, let me throw this at you real fast. 13 goals. He has the best minutes per goal ratio at Chelsea with 149 minutes per goal. Eden Hazard, our top scorer of last season, 183 minutes per goal last season.
That's
so he's
good.
A better goals per minute, minutes per goal, whichever you want to say it, ratio than Eden Hazard last year.
Tammy Abraham's a better player than Eden Hazard.
You heard it here first. Academy of Leaps podcast. Tammy Abraham, future Ballon d'Or winner.
Yep.
So the thing with Tammy Abraham is that despite being one of those players, he's not exactly Tamori. We knew who Tammy Abraham was. He'd been around. He'd been in the Premier League before. He played with Swansea. The thing with him, though, is that when we were coming into the season, I had the biggest youth player for me that was coming in was definitely Mason Mount. He had played with Lampard. He was great at Derby. Everybody had these big he was going to be the youth player that would break out. I also sort of had my eye on Reece James. He's a player of the season at Wigan.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely needed more defenders. And Aspie's getting a little bit old. It was nice to see a young Reece James bounding onto the field.
Yep.
There was definitely a place open for him. Tammy Abraham, while not being quite as underrated as Tomori, was still kind of this unknown figure because he hadn't been coming off great seasons before he came to Chelsea. Unlike Mount, unlike Tomori, unlike these other players, despite playing at a lower level, they were having these great seasons they were coming off of. Tammy Abraham had not. He had played in the Premier League, and he hadn't quite impressed.
Yeah.
So
I just want to add that I think he was one of the top scorers in the Championship, but it was still the Championship. I would also add that the one position that does not translate well from like doing well in the Championship to doing well in the Premier League is the position of a striker, because just the level of defending in the Championship and Premier League, so different. And so, I mean, like when you think of 9 out of 10 Golden Boot winners in the Championship, they come to the Premier League and they score 4 or 5 goals in the entire season.
There's definitely those players that are great at that level, and they're just, that's where they're going to stay.
Yeah, exactly.
They're never going to move. Tammy Abraham was really an unknown quantity at this point. So the fact that he comes in and he starts off amazing. Like, he's banging in goals every other game, every game at this point. He's scoring 1, 2 a game, and he's scoring them from everywhere. He's scoring from inside, outside. He's scoring them with every part of his body that he can imagine. He just doesn't feel like he could stop. That has to be my young player of the season, because he's definitely held that spot. And despite the fact that he's kind of had a dip in quality towards the end of the season, with Giroud coming in and Batshuayi getting some minutes as well for whatever reason, he still feels like that player that we're relying on.
Totally agree with you that he should get the Young Player of the Year award. My Young Player of the Year, I went with Mason Mount, which is also kind of an obvious choice. But the thing about Mason Mount this season and how he's been undroppable. It's so many different layers. One, he scored some really, really important goals. He scored the first goal of our season. He's made some really crucial assists, like in that Leicester game where we played them away. Rudiger scored twice, Mason Mount assisted him twice. And he scored winners, like against Aston Villa. He got us going against Everton in the very last game that we played. And most importantly, this is one of the things that he doesn't get appreciated enough for. It's his pressing play. How he presses the back line or the goalie or the midfield and the rest of the Chelsea team is able to press accordingly. And because of that, we've seen so many different teams concede position to us in their own halves. Or they're not able to do anything with the possession that they have in our own half because of how he presses. And you'll see this kid, it'll be like the 90th minute. And he's like running around as if just this game started. I think he scored against Wolves, and I think he scored in like the somewhere between like the 85th and 90th minute, if I remember it correctly. And that goal that he scored was just like pure reward for his hard work, because he wins the ball, passes it to Batshuayi, who passes it back to him, and he like works incredibly hard towards the end of the game in a game that has clearly been won. To score. And so his hard work and effort is like, for me, I haven't really seen that in a young player almost forever in the time that I've been watching Chelsea play. So that gets me really, really excited. And he's definitely been the most fun and the most like industrious young player to watch this whole season for me. So with that said, we are here. We are going to announce for each one of us our player of the year. Daniel Gonzalez, who is your Chelsea player of the year?
For me, it is none other than the esteemed, the great N'Golo. I'm kidding. It's not Conte.
It better not be. He played three games.
As much as I would love it to be Conte again and again every season, it's not. It's another man in the midfield. It's Mateo Kovacic.
Oh, that's a hard one to beat. Yeah.
Mateo Kovacic. Okay, so when Mateo Kovacic comes from Real Madrid on loan to Chelsea, he does not impress at all in his first season with Chelsea. And at the end of the season, everybody's pretty much calling for him to just go back. Madrid want to sell him for 40 million. And it's like, okay, maybe we'll take him. Maybe we need depth. Maybe he can be a player that's around. He can fulfill a couple roles, whatever. But 40 million's steep for a player like that. We don't want another Drinkwater riding our bench.
Right.
And just kind of getting loaned out over and over again. But the club brings him in, 40 million. And he's amazing. He's great. Him and Jorginho in that pivot at the beginning of the season in that 4-2-3-1 that we start off for a lot of the games in were incredible. They have this great understanding between each other, this Croatian and Italian, Brazilian player.
It's a natural fit.
Completely different types of players. Mateo running around the pitch with Jorginho strolling for the most part.
Yep.
I don't know if Jorginho can run.
I think Jorginho just walks to places.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a walker.
In a very stylish kind of way.
Yeah, he's Italian.
That's true. That's very true. But Mateo Kovacic comes in and impresses everybody. Him and Jorginho have this great understanding between each other. They're completely press resistant. And I don't remember the last time I saw Mateo Kovacic lose a ball.
Yeah.
He has this dribbling style that also reminds me a lot of Hazard.
Yeah.
He has this very low center of gravity. He can keep the ball stuck to his feet. And he's pulled off some amazing runs. I don't have the memory of you do, that you do, where I can pull out specific moments out of games. But just watch any highlight from any season from Mateo Kovacic. You can find Mateo Kovacic highlights online. And they're just full of players pressing him, full of you thinking, how is he going to get out of this? Yeah. And somehow he walked. It's like a magic trick.
Absolutely.
Four players surround him. The ball appears somewhere else. And he's also just right behind it running off. And nobody knows how it happened. So I would have said it was my surprise of the season, but I had total faith in him the whole way. I know I love to say this, but I had faith in Kovacic the entire time that he was going to happen. The fact that it happened to this extent is something that surprised me. But watching those early Chelsea games this season with the youth scoring goals, Mateo Kovacic, and I love saying his full name. I love saying Mateo Kovacic, by the way. Him and Jorginho having this dribbling passing dynamic between them, where there was a few games where they're just in a corner near the Chelsea half. There's like four or five players pressing them, and you just think, just kick it long.
Yeah.
It's the English way. Just throw it out there. And somehow they manage to evade every single player and move it onto the pitch and start a counterattack that eventually leads to a chance.
Yeah.
Was incredible. And The fact that he's a player that's relatively quiet in terms of media, relatively, he's not a goal scorer, he's not an assist maker.
Right.
But he provides that essential link between the defense and the offense.
Absolutely, that is does.
Very needed.
Yep.
And that's a player that is hard to find, and that's a player that you can keep, who's going to keep doing his job for many years to come.
Kovacic, to me, is also the player of the year. So I'm going to comment on yours and also just give my player of the year at the same time. He is just a delight to watch, right? And I don't know if that's enough reason to just award somebody the player or to think that somebody is the best player. He is a delight. But the thing about Mateo Kovacic is he comes into this team, and I don't know if you remember it, but the 3-2 win against Arsenal in Sarri's season, this was like very early on. I think he was making his debut. He comes on as a sub. He comes in with Eden Hazard as a sub. He comes in, I think, in like the 60th or maybe 65th minute. The game was tied at twos. Sarri wanted to win the game.
That was a lucky win.
That was a hugely lucky win. So Eden Hazard comes on, and with him, Mateo Kovacic. We didn't really, as Chelsea fans, we didn't know much about him. And this guy is moving around the midfield and dribbling past players exactly as Eden Hazard would. And he's also wearing number 17, which is Eden Hazard's previous number. And so it's like, wait a minute, is there two of them? This is exciting. But unfortunately, Sarri, obsessed with the short passing game and whatnot, he really pulls back on the dribbling aspect of his game where he doesn't, you know, he comes to a point where he's not doing that anymore. And he's just making the very simple, like 5 or 6 yard pass to Jorginho, who was assigned to do all the long range passing or whatever it was. Where Mateo Kovacic is at his best for me are 1-2 passes and dribbling out of tight spaces. And this season, like in soccer, there are these passes called telegraph passes. I mean, it's a cliche. For example, if a midfielder gets it towards the right side of the field and you see it and you're like, oh, he should switch it to the left winger because there's so much space. And you can just see how he can make the pass, how your winger is going to be able to get it. If everybody sees it and he still makes that pass, that's a telegraph pass because everybody knows it's coming. And with Kovacic, 4 players are coming into where he is. And you just know that he's going to get out of it. You know what's coming. And then he makes it happen. And it's just one of the happiest things for a Chelsea fan. For me, he's been our very best player this season. The way that he was running the midfield against Tottenham, against Man City, against Ajax, and a lot of other teams. Super impressive. And he scored 2 goals this season. So... for one of them was for the in the tie against Valencia, and the other one was in the loss against Everton, which we'll never talk about again. But he scored some goals. So Mateo Kovacic undoubtedly has been our best player this season for me as well.
Hey, we agreed on one thing.
Finally.
Look at that.
It's bound to happen. Okay, welcome to part 2 of today's episode. And in this episode, we are going to talk about, or we're going to continue talking about, our road to Champions League glory. Now, just to quickly summarize, in last week's episode, we talked about how Chelsea finished first in a group that included Genk from Belgium, Valencia from Spain, and Bayer Leverkusen from Germany. We finished with 11 points, with Bayer Leverkusen as runners-up with 10 points. We had to win on the last day of the match of the group matches in order to get through, and we beat Valencia 3-0 at home with goals from Didier Drogba and Ramirez. We also established that our league form so far this season has been great, and there was a lot of tension in the squad. So this was already, I mean, at this point, we were halfway through the season in 2012, and I think most Chelsea fans had accepted that this is going to be just one of those throwaway seasons that we're going to not remember for any special reason. And boy, were we wrong. One of the consistent trends that we saw was Frank Lampard, John Terry, Michael Essien, Didier Drogba, and Ashley Cole were consistently getting benched by the then manager, Andre Villas-Boas, or infamously known as AVB. The knockout stages are getting set to begin. Daniel, the last thing that we revealed in our last episode was who we got drawn against. Who was it?
It was none other than Napoli. Italian Napoli. Team.
So we were going to make a trip to Naples. Now, Daniel, if you would quickly describe to us how the knockout stages of the Champions League work, for anybody who may not know, how do the knockout stages of the Champions League work?
So you play two ties, two games. One game at home for you, away for the other team. One game away for you, home for the other team.
You play two games against the same team.
Correct.
What else?
So really, the way the Champions League kind of works is they kind of count this as one sort of game.
Yep.
In terms of scoreline. They combine the scorelines, and whoever scored the most over those two games wins. So if you, say, win 1-0 at home and then go to the other team's stadium and lose 2-0, overall the game is on aggregate 2-1, you lose. Even though you won your first game, you're out. If the game is tied after those two games, then the winner would be away goals. So whoever scored the most goals at the other team's stadium would go through. And if you're tied on that, then it goes to extra time. And after extra time, penalties.
With that said, let's talk about the actual tie, or the two games that we played against Napoli. The first game was going to be played in Estadio Sao Paulo, which is in Naples, Italy. Chelsea traveled to Napoli, and this game was just another typical game under AVB, because in this game we see that Frank Lampard, Michael Essien, and Ashley Cole are on the bench, all fit, ready to go, legends of the club. I mean, they've been through thick and thin with the club, but they are benched because, I mean, for Ashley Cole, what's his name? AVB wants to use Josip Asingwa, who is never ever the right back or left back that we remember as one of the greats. In midfield, he puts in Raul Mirelis instead of Frank Lampard, and Daniel Sturridge, of all people, starts that game. And the game actually gets off to a good start, because in the 27th minute, we get the first goal. Juan Mata, it was a very lucky goal. Daniel Sturridge makes a pretty poor pass towards Juan Mata, but a Napoli defender tries to clear, but it like bounces funny off the surface, and it falls perfectly for Juan Mata. Mata then just like side foots it into the bottom of the net. Peachy finish, but lucky goal. For sure lucky goal. Then Napoli kind of wake up, because in the 37th minute, they get a goal. Now Napoli had a few players that are like legends for this team, but they also weren't in the same caliber as Chelsea, so they should not be favorites to go through this game as winners, or go through the tie as winners. So with all the tension that was going on at Stamford Bridge between the fans and the players and the board and the manager and everything, this was a game and a tie that Chelsea could not afford to surrender. Because if they surrendered this whole tie over the two games, if they lost, then truly the season would be completely over. Mata scores in the 27th minute, but then Napoli respond with a goal from Lavezzi, and then Cavani, and then Lavezzi again. And Chelsea come under the sword, lose the game 3-1, and something crucial, probably this one single and most important thing in the entire season, happens when Chelsea go back home. AVB, under Villas-Boas, gets the axe, or the sack, or in American terms, he gets fired. They say, you're not doing a good enough job, so you got to go. So the crazy thing about this was, even though I really, really, really was against everything that AVB was doing when it comes to his starting lineups, his tactics and everything, I was still somewhat disappointed when he got let go, because it just felt like, man, this club just won't give anybody else a chance. But boy, was I wrong, and they were right. He gets sacked, and promoted to first team manager was his assistant at the time, Robbie Di Matteo.
Roberto.
Roberto Di Matteo.
We're not familiar enough with him.
I am. Speak for yourself. So, Roberto Di Matteo.
He's our next
comes
guest.
In and he's, yeah. But Robbie Di Matteo comes in, and he is now the new Chelsea coach. In his first game in charge, he restores and brings in a lot of the Chelsea players that have been out of favor and frozen out by AVB. And he just allows them to actually play as they would under any manager. And these are players that have been doing well under every single manager that they played for.
For context, in at least the way I've seen it, in the Premier League and other leagues, when an interim manager comes in to manage the club for a while, it's not expected that the club is going to, you're not giving this interim manager over and saying, all right, you're going to win the Champions League, you're going to make a late title run for the Premier League. These managers are brought in to stabilize. They're not typically brought in as these tactical coaches in the middle of the season to revitalize the club. They're brought in to kind of calm everything down.
Yeah.
Keep the players' heads.
Damage control, in essence.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because the board felt like, oh, if we keep going in this direction, things are just going to keep getting worse. They're not going to improve at all. So let's just keep them as bad as they are and make sure that we do not find ourselves in a place where we can't recover from this season next season. So that's really good, Daniel. Thanks for that point. His first task at hand is to get Chelsea through the knockout stages of the Champions League and get them into the next round. Now, he's already fighting an uphill battle because Chelsea lost 3-1 against Napoli. Now, if you lose 3-1, then what you need to make sure is win by 2 goals or more without the other team scoring. So if Chelsea won 2-0, that'd be great. If they won 3-0, that'd be great. But if Napoli scored 1, then Chelsea would have to score 4.
That's the funny thing, isn't it? You score 2-0, you're great. You score 3-0, you're great. 3-1, you're out.
Yeah.
You're out of the Champions League.
Exactly.
That's what makes the away goal rule so interesting, is it comes up with these strange scenarios.
Yeah. The game's about to go ahead. The lineups come out, and we see a more familiar lineup and vastly different from the first game that we saw. In this starting lineup are Petr Cech, Ivanovic, David Luiz and Terry in the middle, Ashley Cole at left back. Then you have Lampard, Essien, and Ramirez in the middle. Then you have Mata, Sturridge, Daniel Sturridge, and Didier Drogba up top.
Except one, perhaps, name.
Yeah.
All except one. These are Chelsea players. These are like the core. These are some of the great players of Chelsea's history.
Exactly.
Returned back.
Exactly.
And AVB isn't exactly a tactical. He's not a tactician. Really. I mean, his strategy is basically, I'm going to let these veteran players go out. I'm going to give them a lineup or something.
Yep.
We don't know what happened. He might have even let them choose the lineup.
Oriol Romeu was choosing lineups.
But he just lets them go out there, and they play their game.
Yep.
They play the game that they've played for years. They all know each other. They've all played there for years.
Yeah, and what we see in that Chelsea against Napoli game at Stamford Bridge was a reborn Chelsea team. I remember Drogba scoring early on in the game. In the 29th minute, he scores, and just his celebration and how he was like, let's go, let's do this. It was amazing. And on that night, the atmosphere at Stamford Bridge was absolutely incredible. Chelsea fans were singing out loud. They were out singing the Italians. And you don't do that. The Italians, they like their songs.
Especially not in England.
Especially not in England. So, Didier Drogba scores in the 29th minute. Chelsea are 1-0 up. Then John Terry scores in the 47th minute. He scores from a corner kick. I believe Frank Lampard assisted it. It was a Lampard corner that Terry scores. At this point, Chelsea are going through because they scored a goal away from home and Napoli is yet to score. But unfortunately, a player named Inler scores for Napoli in the 55th minute. So now it's 2-1 to Chelsea, but advantage to Napoli.
Despite Chelsea doing well at this point, you should go and watch anybody. Okay. For any game we talk about, you absolutely should go watch it because these are all incredible games. These are all classic games. Even if you've already seen them and it's been a while, go back and rewatch them.
Definitely worth a rewatch.
Watching this game, it's not even clear that Chelsea's going to go through. Knowing that Chelsea goes through and wins the Champions League at all, I was nervous watching this game.
That's a sign of a good game.
Napoli is coming through with chances. They are coming through. Despite having the players back, despite having a core of players that understand each other and know what they're doing together, and despite being freed from the restrictions of AVB, like being actually able to play the game, this is not a Champions League ready team. This is not a team that's like a Guardiola team that has a system in place that knows what each player is going to do. They're not. They're still letting in players. They're still letting Cavani run through. They're still letting shots come off. And it's not a sure bet. So when that goal is scored, it's the slightest deflating of the stadium at that point.
Yeah. Luckily, towards the 75th minute of the game, there's a Chelsea corner kick. Frank Lampard takes it. Ivanovic heads it. And former Liverpool player Andreas Dolcena does us a huge favor because his hand is at a place and a time where it shouldn't be. And so Chelsea win a penalty because he is called for a handball. And
his hand's over his head. It's in no place it should be.
He saved it better than Kepa has been saving most shots this season. And so to take this penalty, up steps the one, the only, the Frank, the Lampard, which is poetic. It was written in the stars that it had to happen this way because he was going to be the person who was going to kind of just get us on this path of a comeback of all comebacks. Up steps Frank Lampard to take the penalty, and he shoots to his left, the keeper's right. By the way, that left side of Frank Lampard's, when he's taking penalties, that is his favorite side to shoot. I got to find out what the statistics are when it comes to like his shots that have gone to the left side as opposed to the rest of the penalty area. But that is his favorite side. And many times the keepers go the right way, but they're just
you can't save that shot.
You can't save that
shot. That is a great shot. That penalty is a perfect penalty.
So he takes this incredible penalty. Now the game is tied at 3-1. But because it was 3-1 away and 3-1 at home, and both teams have scored three on one another, and a total of four goals in the tie, now it does have to go to extra time. Now, extra time begins. For those of you who don't know, extra time in soccer is simply just two halves of 15 minutes each. It's not next goal wins. It's not anything weird like that. Both halves do have to be played, and whoever's got the most amount of goals overall in the entire game is the one who wins the game. Now, this half starts, again, as Daniel mentioned earlier, Napoli is having chances left and right. So if you're a Chelsea fan watching live and for the first time at this point, your heart is like, you know, in your mouth. It's just ready to come out because it's a fun game to watch looking back at it now, but it was not a fun game to watch back then. And if you're a Chelsea fan, you get so much PTSD from the Champions League, of losing to Man United in the final, of losing to Liverpool in 2004 with a goal that should have never been given, of losing to Barcelona in the last minute. And so it's like, oh, is this going to be another one of those years where we're so close to getting into the next round and yet so far away?
Especially because in the very last minutes of the game, Torres misses a chance.
Yeah.
And it's an open net.
What else is new, though?
I think the keeper, I don't know the keeper's name off the top of my head, but he rushes out to collect a ball, and he rushes outside of the penalty area, and the ball just goes over his head. He can't reach forward with his hands. It seems like he's, like, second-guessing himself,
yep.
And Torres gets the ball. Granted, it's a tight angle, but he just flashes it wide, and that, if you're a Chelsea fan, up until this point, not knowing what's going to happen at this point in time, that feels like the moment. That feels like, oh, Torres missed it. This is it. We're going to go to penalties. We're going to lose. It's going to be another Chelsea Champions League loss.
Yeah. But up steps Branislav Ivanovic, a Chelsea cult hero. I would suggest he shows up in the 1 minute that was added time on top of the 15 minutes that was played in the first half of the extra time. Ramirez gets the ball down the line, gets it to Drogba, who's out wide. And the funny thing about this goal is you've got all these players that are seemingly completely out of position, right? Because you've got Drogba playing the role of winger. And he quickly turns around and just fires the ball into the penalty box. And inside the penalty box, right by the penalty spot, is our right back of all people. He has no business doing anything there.
The Branislav. Marcus Alonso.
Exactly.
Of this early stage.
But thank God he was there because he just fires it in. And all of a sudden, Chelsea have the advantage. Now they've scored 4 in this game. Napoli only scored 3 in the first game. So now the aggregate, or the total number of goals that Chelsea has scored, is 5. The total number of goals that Napoli has scored is 4. So therefore, Chelsea have the advantage. The dangerous thing still was that if Napoli scored, they would go through because of the away goals rule. Thankfully, Napoli don't score. Chelsea go through as 5-4 winners in the tie of the round of 16 of the Champions League.
What a game.
Yeah.
What a game.
Absolutely.
On that last goal, I've rewatched that last goal a million times, and Drogba getting the Drogba. First of all, Ramirez getting to Drogba is great, because he's already covered by a player, passing through to Drogba, who is marked by a player. But Drogba, 2 touches, 1 touch to kind of turn it around, mm-hmm. and lose the mark, and 1 touch to pass it in directly to Ivanovic, who, it might be good that it was Ivanovic there and everyone's out of position, because Drogba's the striker, everyone's focused on Drogba, he's the big game player, he's who you expect to make that goal. But Ivanovic, the right back, is standing right on the penalty spot, and there's no one near him. He's completely unmarked.
Yep.
He just takes 1 touch to shoot that ball right into the top of the net. It ripples the net. You know when a goal ripples the net and you're like, oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. That's like a cinematic moment.
Yeah, it is. And you can hear the sound of the net rippling.
Yeah.
Just like, oh.
That's such a nostalgic sound for me. That's so specific but so satisfying to hear. That's what happens here. And of all people, it's Ivanovic who gets this. You expect it to be the Drogbas, the Lampards, even John Terry, even the captains to get this. But no, it's Ivanovic, a cult hero of Chelsea.
Any striker scores that, they'd be very proud of themselves.
Chelsea, against all odds, have progressed to the Champions League. Despite that, it's still the quarterfinals they got to get to.
Yep.
They've just gotten to the quarterfinals. If they want to make it to the final, they want to win the final, that's 3 more games they have to win.
2 more ties that they have to win,
to get to the final. Yep. So, it's not won by any extent.
Absolutely.
But the players celebrate.
As if it was.
Because not only, it's not just a Champions League win, it's not just a comeback, but it feels like rejuvenated. It feels like they got that belief back. It feels like maybe this is it. Maybe this is the time for us to win it.
It feels like a monkey named AVB is off their back. That's what it feels like. They were ecstatic about it.
You told me about this show on Amazon Prime. This is Football.
Yep.
Which has this great segment on, they have a whole episode talking about the factor of luck in the game. And they have one segment specifically talking about Chelsea's Champions League run in that episode. If you have Amazon Prime and you can't check it out, you should absolutely check it out. It's a great show.
Yep.
It's a wonderful show.
I think the name of the episode itself might be Underdogs. Or it's either Underdogs or Luck in football. But essentially, that's what it's about. And it kind of just picks it up there, where in the Chelsea against Napoli tie, and talks about how in every single one of those games, Chelsea was the underdog and how they shouldn't have won. And there was so much luck and so much favor going their way that somehow they were able to just navigate through all those teams and make it into the final.
Every team that wins a title, any team that wins the Champions League, the Premier League, anything, they always have to have a luck on their side. Chelsea in 2016-2017 had almost no injuries. The team was fit the entire time. We played the same starting 11 like 30 times out of every single match, something crazy like that. Liverpool in the season that's currently going on have incredible amounts of luck with their scoring. They've scored a ton of goals at the last minute this season. They scored lots of clean sheets that they shouldn't have had.
A bunch of VAR calls go their way.
Exactly.
And you see opposition defenders and goalies making Sunday League mistakes, Sunday League level mistakes.
And you can't really get mad about it because every team has it.
Exactly.
If you
every
win,
champion has it.
Yeah. If you win something, you have to have luck on your side. The only difference between Liverpool and City in the season before this one, where City won it, is that City had that extra bit of luck. Even though Liverpool were keeping up with them every step of the way during the last parts of that season.
Oh, absolutely. And it feels like in that 2012 season, all of a sudden, the luck was beginning to be on our side. A-okay. Well, I know that this probably has been one of the longer podcast episodes, but that's okay. You got to hang out with us for a little bit longer. It's not like you've got anything to do these days. Thanks for hanging out with us. We want to let you know of how you can get involved and how you can get connected with us at Academy of Blues. We have an email address that takes in questions, comments, concerns, and show topics, ideas, anything that you guys want us to talk about.
If you're mad at us.
If you're mad at us, tell us. If you disagree, we would love to hear that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we got a disagreement from, like, Thailand or somewhere around the world?
Please. We know some stuff. We don't know some stuff.
Yeah.
Feel free to correct us.
I've also never gotten into a disagreement with somebody from Zambia, so...
It's on my bucket list.
Mine too.
Please.
It's crazy.
Hit us up. We're at academyofblues@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at Academy of Blues. Get a hold of us wherever you can.
And also, this will be fun. Why don't you, if you're still listening, do us a favor and just send us an email saying, I'm still listening and I am listening from blank, whatever city, state, country, wherever you're from. Because we would love to hear that and celebrate that. So, thanks for listening. I've been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And this has been Academy of Blues, Episode 8.